In 1927, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in Buck versus Bell that the state of Virginia was permitted to sterilize Carrie Buck, a young woman it wrongly thought to be feeble-minded. Imbeciles, the Supreme Court, American eugenics, and the sterilization of Carrie Buck by New York Times bestselling author Adam Cohen exposes the story of one of the darkest moments in American legal tradition. The Supreme Court's decision to champion eugenic sterilization of undesirable citizens for the greater good of the country. The 8-1 ruling was signed by some of the most revered figures in American law, including Chief Justice William Howard Taft, a former U.S. president, and Louis Brandeis, a progressive icon. Oliver Wendell Holmes, considered by many the greatest Supreme Court justice in history, wrote the majority opinion. Adam Cohen is a former member of the New York Times editorial board and a senior writer for Time magazine. His new book, Imbeciles, the Supreme Court, American Eugenics, and the Sterilization of Carrie Buck, and we welcome him to the roundtable this morning. Adam, thank you very much for being with us.
Great to be here.
What brought you to this infamous 1927 Supreme Court case?
Well, I was interested in writing about the Supreme Court, and in particular, I wanted to write about something bad they did. We get a lot of books about the good things they did. I thought we could learn more from looking at something terrible they did, and this is one of the worst cases in Supreme Court history, but very few people know about it. It's really been lost to history.
Set it up for us as to what brought it to the Supreme Court and how it eventually landed there.
Sure. So it's really the story of one woman, Carrie Buck, a young woman who was labeled feeble-minded by the state of Virginia and was scheduled for a eugenic sterilization. So the backdrop of this is that in the 1920s, the nation was really caught in the grip of eugenics fervor. People around the country were convinced that we needed to do something to uplift the nation's gene pool. And this was at the highest levels. The president of Harvard, the president of Stanford, Alexander Graham Bell, Theodore Roosevelt, all of the luminaries of our society really believe this. So as a result, they started passing eugenic sterilization laws to sterilize people who were deemed to be unfit. Carrie Buck ends up being committed to the colony for epileptics and feeble-minded in Virginia, labeled wrongly as feeble-minded, right after Virginia passed its law, and she becomes targeted as the first woman in Virginia to be eugenically sterilized.
Tell us a little bit about her backstory, about what put her in that position.
Yeah, it's a very sad story. There was nothing wrong with her physically or mentally. She was born into a poor family in Virginia. She was being raised by a single mother. And at that time, there was a belief that poor children were better off being raised in middle-class homes. She got put in a foster family in Charlottesville, Virginia, and then, tragically, one summer was raped by the nephew of her foster mother. When she became pregnant, this was a problem for the family. There was a lot of stigma to pregnancy out of wedlock. Also, their nephew had committed a crime. So the decision was made to get rid of her. It was not that hard in those days to get someone labeled epileptic and feeble-minded and sent off to a colony, and that's exactly what they did. They got a commission of feeble-mindedness to say that she was epileptic and feeble-minded, and she was sent away as a prisoner.
One of the things that is especially troubling about the story is there really are no good guys, are there? When it comes to the people who were, even those, her own lawyer, those who were defending her, no one was standing up for this woman.
That's exactly right. The lawyer she's given is actually a lawyer who is close to the other side and does a terrible job in representing her. The doctor who runs the colony for epileptics and feeble-minded, so he's really in charge of her well-being, he's out to get her. The lawyer on the other side is, of course, trying to get her sterilized. And then when it gets up to the Supreme Court is 8-1 in favor of sterilizing her. So she was a poor, uneducated woman who really had no one advocating for her.
Let us go to one of the surprises, at least for me in the book, was Oliver Wendell Holmes, often regarded as one of the great Supreme Court justices in our history. And in this story, he comes off as a far darker character.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And like you, I had been raised with high esteem for Oliver Wendell Holmes. I actually went to law school at Harvard, where he's on a lot of the walls. There are portraits of him. He's a very revered figure. They're a former Harvard law professor before he joined the court. So I thought he was a pretty noble fellow. But yeah, this case actually shines a light on really the dark side that was a very big part of who he was. He was a eugenicist actually before this case came along. He had been raised as a Boston Brahmin, in this elite caste in Boston, families that traced their lineage back very far, and actually thought they were better than other people. The word Brahmin, his father coined the phrase Boston Brahmin. Brahmin was an allusion to the Indian caste system. They thought they were at the top of the caste system. So when Carrie Buck comes along saying, you know, that she doesn't want to be eugenically sterilized by a state that says that she's unfit and that her genes are unworthy, Oliver Wendell Holmes is just the sort of elitist who agrees with the state of Virginia and thinks there should be more people like him and his well-bred colleagues in Boston and fewer people like Carrie Buck.
Of course, the court case is Buck versus Bell. Who is the Bell in the case?
Yeah, Bell is the superintendent of the Colony for Epileptics and Feeble-Minded. He actually was replaced. He replaced someone in the middle of the case. Albert Priddy was the first superintendent. But it was Bell who, when the case got to the Supreme Court, who was going to sterilize her if he prevailed. And in fact, he did prevail. The court rules that Carrie Buck can be sterilized. And Dr. Bell was the one who performed the sterilization of Carrie Buck at the Colony for Epileptics and Feeble-Minded.
Let us go back to Dr. Albert Priddy for a moment. He is the superintendent of the Colony for Epileptics and Feeble-Minded. And he was looking for a case, and you say he was the architect of this lawsuit, to test the constitutionality of the law, and was the one who really personally chose Carrie Buck to be the center of it.
That's correct. Yes, he was the head of the colony, so his job was to take care of epileptics and feeble-minded people. He was also a eugenicist. He felt the best way to care for people like that would be to stop them from reproducing so that we wouldn't have them in future generations. So he was the one who actually pushed the bill for eugenic sterilization through the Virginia legislature. And then when it was enacted, on the advice of his lawyer, he decided that there should be a test case. And yes, he identified Carrie Buck as being, as he thought, the perfect person to be at the middle of it, because she had been labeled feeble-minded by him. He had personally examined her. Her mother was also an inmate at the colony, and she had a young daughter that they could send an expert to examine. And although it was just a small baby, they found an expert who would say that that baby was feeble-minded too, although it was not. So it allowed them to say that she was part of three generations of imbecility. And then also, she was someone who had given birth at a young age, you know, putting aside the fact that she only gave birth at a young age because she had been raped, that this is the sort of person that the eugenicist could say, these feeble-minded people, they get pregnant at a young age, they have many children, they're going to take over the country. So she checked a lot of boxes for them.
At the time when the decision comes down, then what is the timeline from the decision to when she is actually sterilized?
Yeah, it's very quick. It's later that year in 1927, a month later, and then actually her sister, Doris, who's also an inmate of the colony, is also one of the first women in Virginia to be sterilized. She was also deemed feeble-minded. So once they got the ruling, they began sterilizing people like the Buck sisters very quickly.
Tell us about the one justice who was the dissent in this case.
Yeah, it's an important story. His name was Pierce Butler. He was the one Catholic on the court and also one of the most conservative members of the court. Although he did not write dissents, we don't know exactly what he was thinking. It's thought that he probably was influenced by his Catholic faith. He was quite a religious man. And at the time, Catholics are really sort of the one heroic group in this story. They were the most organized group opposing eugenic sterilization. So when bills were before state legislatures, the one group that consistently showed up were nuns and priests and Catholic lay people opposing eugenic sterilization for probably two reasons. One is that the traditional Catholic reverence for the reproductive cycle, but also Catholics at the time believed that people should be judged on their spiritual qualities, not physical qualities that the eugenicists were focused on. So they didn't like this idea of deeming certain people, you know, unhealthy or unfit, and then thereby saying that they were unworthy of reproducing. So Pierce Butler was probably part of that Catholic tradition of opposition to eugenic sterilization.
The majority opinion stated famously, three generations of imbeciles are enough. When you look at those eight justices who went along with this decision, we mentioned Oliver Wendell Holmes, of course. There are some other very big names there as well.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, the chief justice at the time was William Howard Taft, who had been president of the United States and a Yale law professor before he joined the court. So the first former president to do that. So he was a very distinguished justice, one of the most distinguished. And then Louis Brandeis, who is one of the greatest progressives to serve on the court. He was known as the people's attorney in Boston before he was appointed. And he was a trust buster for President Wilson, one of the great progressive legal minds. And both of them signed on to the majority opinion with Oliver Wendell Holmes.
One of the things that is fascinating in the book and also very disturbing is that this case was never overturned.
That's correct. And, you know, the Supreme Court has issued a lot of, you know, bad rulings in its time. You know, Dred Scott, where it said that slaves could not sue for their own freedom. Plessy versus Ferguson, which upheld the Jim Crow racial segregation system in the South, and others. But those have largely all been overturned. Buck versus Bell has not. The court had an opportunity in 1942 in a case challenging an Oklahoma eugenic sterilization law, but it struck down Oklahoma's law on very narrow grounds. And the justice who wrote the decision said, yes, we did not intend to overturn Buck versus Bell. And as recently as 2001, a U.S. Court of Appeals in Missouri, which is just one step below the Supreme Court, cited Buck versus Bell in a case involving sterilization of a mildly mentally retarded woman. So it still is the law. And that means that although there are not eugenic sterilization laws at the state level right now, if they were to be enacted, if Congress were to enact some kind of eugenics law, and, you know, we're in a pretty crazy political time these days, we would like to think the Supreme Court would say these things were unconstitutional, but right now, based on their current law, they would not say that.
As a result, following this decision, how many people were sterilized as a result?
Well, during the eugenic era, 70,000 is roughly what people think. Between 60 and 70,000 were sterilized. And then, of course, many more were, like Carrie's mother, imprisoned in a colony for their entire lives because they were deemed to be feeble-minded or some kind of a threat. So many people not allowed to have children, and many more locked away just because the government thought that their genes were unworthy.
And as you stated a moment ago, we still have 22 states that currently have laws permitting sterilization of people judged by the government to be mentally defective. What kind of efforts have there been to overturn those laws, and what efforts were there in the other states to put the laws on the books?
Yeah, well, the eugenics era itself is really over. I think it's important to note that in 1981, Oregon did the last eugenic sterilization, and in 1983, they closed down their eugenic sterilization office. So we're not really in a eugenics era. There are different states that have different policies about whether people should reproduce based on their ability to be a parent and that sort of thing. But I would distinguish that from the eugenics era, because the eugenics era was really about saying, we're going to uplift the American gene pool by getting the people with bad genes not to reproduce. Right now, we're not officially doing that by law anywhere, but it does go on subterraneously. So a few years ago, it was revealed that in California prisons, there were women who were being sterilized and not being told about it. There was a case of a prosecutor in Tennessee a couple years ago who was fired for allegedly making sterilization part of his plea negotiations. So it's that eugenic kind of sterilization that says, we think you're an unfit person mentally or physically, and we don't want your genes, that is really the most troubling in many ways. And we're not doing that officially right now, but it could come back at any time.
The name of the book is Imbeciles, the Supreme Court, American Eugenics, and the Sterilization of Carrie Buck. The book is published by Penguin Books. Adam Cohen, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book, Imbeciles. It is published by Penguin Press. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.